This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. It's that time on a Wednesday. Yes, it is. It is time for Auto Central, proudly powered by Autotrader.co.za, your trusted motoring marketplace. How are we doing today, guys?
Brilliant. Super excited. Yeah, I'm excited about the topics we've got going.
Hey? Yeah, we've got a couple of fantastic ones, I think. Hey?
All about the future.
All about the future. As usual, my co-hosts here today, to my left, Wilmarie Janssen van Rensburg at SA Speed Queen.
Hello, hello.
And to her left, as we go around in the circle, at George Mini.
That's it.
And George Mini, our Auto Trader bigwig. He's here and he's a...
bigwig.
I don't know if you're talking about my hair.
No. I saw...
Lucky this is radio.
for many reasons, in fact. For many reasons.
Where does the wig come in?
A bigwig is just a, you know, head honcho, a...
Groot meneer.
Ja, groot kop.
Let's stop there.
We'll kill it there. Then we're also joined by Ricardo Kutsia. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chet. Thank you, Marie and George.
You are here. You are the managing executive for the automotive sector of Innovation Group, correct?
Yes, Chet. I am the managing executive for the automotive division at Innovation.
All right. Now, just give us a quick brief here quickly as to what is Innovation Group. Can you sort of sum it up into a small little digestible little ball for us?
I'll try my best.
I think the word is big, but I mean what you guys do there is big, so that's interesting.
Yes. Yeah, we Innovation Group South Africa is a local subsidiary of the Innovation Group UK group.
Okay.
We specialize across different territories, Europe, Asia and Africa, into we're actually a business process outsource business.
And what does that mean?
What we do is, on behalf of insurers, financial institutions, the automotive industry, and fleet businesses, we provide them with claims administration services, supply management services. We build products, you know, value-add products for those industries, like your warranties, maintenance plans, and service plans. And, of course, one of our biggest clients is actually the OEMs or motor manufacturers, where they actually outsource some of their back office administration services to us.
Okay.
So that's basically that most of those services get outsourced, and we then do it on behalf of our clients, which could either be a bank, a financial insurer, or, for example, one of the big motor manufacturers. That's what we're doing. Trying to summarize in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Okay. So
quite it's actually very important.
I'm sitting here, I'm like, wow, that's like the backbone of motor industry in South Africa.
The future of it, like we were saying.
Well, yes. I mean, you were mentioning that you were on a media conference.
Conference
a short while ago, and it was also all dealing with the future, and especially the future of tech in the automotive sector, correct?
Yes. Yeah, I think what we've done, the next couple of years, we're moving into very interesting times in terms of the automotive industry. Technology is changing the industry at a drastic rate. So what we've done, we've commissioned the survey where we engage with various stakeholders, from manufacturers, car dealers, finance houses, all the experts, via a company that we've recruited, Knowledge Executive.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose was to put all of these guys around one table. We've done some roundtable research, and we've also done one-on-one engagement with all the big honchos, as you've mentioned earlier, in the industry. And the idea was we need to get what is their view of the future.
I don't remember being invited.
Yeah.
Oh, George.
Well, don't worry. We won't put you on the spot, but I asked, where's the bikes?
Yes.
Which we'll get to later.
We'll get to later, So I think the idea was to start sort of forecast. That's why it's called the Future Now Report. The idea is to understand what will happen in the next 10 years. Consider with all the technology and the impact technology will have on consumer behavior, buying behavior, dealer models, a manufacturer, and we've compiled this report, created a lot of debate in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the gospel. This is just getting everybody's input and see how can we assist our clients and, of course, the industry players to get ready for what's coming in the next couple of years.
So sort of like a massive brainstorming of their vision of where they see it going and see it developing.
Yes.
Okay.
So who's the there? Like, so the OEMs?
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay. I mean, that would be the OEMs, manufacturers on, and I'm gathering on the manufacturing side.
Yes.
You know, predominantly on the manufacturing side, and then also on the business side, where do they see the business, you know, of...
The dealer side, basically.
Yeah, the dealer side going.
So what are those various silos that you're kind of trying to predict the future for? You know, obviously it's self-driving cars. So, you know, we can take that as a given. Everyone's talking about it. It's the car itself and the technology inside that car. What are the other silos that that you're dealing with?
Very important, the consumer. Okay. What impact the technology's got on the consumer behavior?
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, the consumers that buy these vehicles. So the manufacturers need to understand what do we want as consumers in terms of when we buy vehicles. And they have to, of course, align their strategy with what the consumers want. And then there's obviously other regulatory concerns in terms of regulations. We've seen what happened with emissions, you know, in terms of laws and making sure that everybody stick to the to the rule of the law.
Without mentioning names.
But I think the important thing is that we love this industry. I'm passionate about this industry. It's about cars. Mm. But as cars in the industry change, we need to change as a business. Because if you don't change, unfortunately, you will not be around in the next couple of years. Mm. And that's the important thing about how do we prepare, get ourselves ready for the future.
And it is. I mean, the automotive sector is something that is constantly changing, and just the development that I've seen in the last year, and especially in the terms of the integration of technology and digitizing almost the experience, there's been so much that has happened. You know, it's fantastic, massive changes.
I mean, if I have to think about it, and you know, Ricardo, you can kind of jump in here and tell me if I'm talking nonsense because I wasn't at that round table. So you know, for me, it's the car itself that's kind of getting driven by international things. You know, there's very little South Africa can influence there because we don't have our own car. You know, so the likes of Germany and Japan and Korea and the places that the cars actually get made. So that technology will more than likely be driven from those places. And you know, although we'll have a small influence, probably not a massive influence over that. So in South Africa itself, where's the automotive industry kind of headed?
I think South Africa, the industry is a bit, not to say in trouble. I think if you look at, you know, the motor industry is dependent on spend. And as we see currently, you know, consumer spending is a bit under pressure. And what you'll see over the next couple of years is that the economic condition also influence our buying behavior. For example, in tough times like that, we can't afford to buy new vehicles. What will then happen? Consumers will then trade down to pre-owned vehicles. Mm. Also, in tough economic times, we will not buy the big gas guzzlers and the big SUVs. People will then just look at mobility. That's the important thing. Mm. So I think where we are as industry, we know we've got a very strong manufacturing base here, and we're doing very well. If you consider that we export vehicles across the world, and the quality of those vehicles are excellent. So I think as an international manufacturing hub, we got a good reputation there. And that helps us during difficult times because if we can't sell locally, we're able to export to different regions. And I think the quality is very important of the vehicles that we actually make because that assists you, obviously, to get more manufacturers coming to South Africa. So I think where we are in terms of the industries that we've went to a big growth, you know, the growing middle class over the last couple of years. We all want to have a vehicle, have seen the industry take off in terms of sales. We're going through a bit of a dip in the next couple of years. But I think there is still, which may help the industries, that compared to Europe and other markets, our public infrastructure is not that well developed. So we still rely heavily on vehicles. And that's why there's still a big need to own my own vehicle, which is also another debate we can have. Do I have to own a vehicle or can I lease a vehicle?
Well, let's talk about that because, you know, some places have this future idea that we're going to move away from car ownership and we're going to move very rapidly towards car sharing, car rental, and that sort of environment where you don't need to own a car. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I
think don't want to share my car or my man.
That's you.
I'm just saying.
No, but you're spot on. South Africans, we love our cars and we like to own our cars. We take pride in our cars. So that will probably still continue for a while. But yes, there's changes happening in the, let's call it the mobility culture. You have Uber and a lot of other car sharing services coming too, and people are using them. That's very important.
So are there indications that you guys have seen that this is the future in South Africa?
Yeah, I think South Africa, there's a market for it. There will be a market for car sharing. But the overall feedback from the industry and from the people, South Africans still, everybody's boy and girl's dream is to own their own car. Because sort of an independence. Mm. It's also, our cars is also an extension of our personalities and who we are. You know, that's why sometimes we spend a bit more on cars than that we should. But that's the culture.
But yeah. Ricardo, would you mind maybe explaining to the guys listening a little more what it actually means to share a car? Because I think there's confusion. There is for me. What exactly does that mean?
Okay. The options is, okay, first of all, do I need to own a vehicle? If I don't own a car, well, how will I get around? In more developed countries, you've got transport. You know, you can get the tube, you can get a bus, you can get various. So I don't need a car. I can do all my stuff, go about all my stuff without needing a vehicle. But in some cases where I do need a vehicle, because maybe I need to go to work commitments, you know, then what will happen with my vehicle in the downtime? So the idea of car sharing is if I only use my vehicle 50% of the time, maybe I can take the other 50% and rent it out to somebody else to use. So it's almost maximizing our vehicles, taking then our own lifestyle into consideration. That's the one option. You know, we've seen there's a company, Locomote. You know, we've had some discussions where they said, you know, I don't need a car. We'll have a central vehicle. And if and when you need a vehicle, you know, you get your code, you register it, you go online, you get your vehicle, you drive it from here to Pretoria. So I don't need to rent a vehicle.
And didn't the UK pioneer this?
Yeah, best companies doing that.
Yeah,
really.
In the UK, this is I think it was the UK or America. This was quite a big thing where you know you've got these car lots and the cars are parked and you literally go and scan a code and you get the key and you can take the car and can park it at a different lot.
Correct, and then you leave it there. You carry on. If you stay there 2 or 3 days, when you need to get back home, you go to the next lot again and collect the vehicle. So
categorize that as car sharing.
It's car sharing. Mm-hmm. You know. That's how we categorize
cars. And the car doesn't belong to any individual. It's actually driven by a corporate business.
Yes.
Okay.
And so what are the risks in that, though?
In South Africa, there's a big risk. Because what if the guy don't bring the car back? Yeah, I think that was part of the, you know, sort of the risk.
Why it hasn't gone anywhere yet.
But I can safely say the technology they've built in terms of the app and the security and the codes that you need to get the car going, I think there's also a market for it. And let's use, for example, students. You know, you've got a university. Mm. You know, you spend 80% or maybe a big portion of your time on campus. But if you need to move off campus, you know, you need in a car. But in most cases with this, you don't need a car. You can then use the car as you need it. Right?
And it's a safe form of transport. You can't just walk these days anymore and those kind of things. There is a safety issue. So where is this currently, besides the UK, working? And for how long, I think?
I think in the from the research in the US, and it's been around for, I think, the last... actually, what happened is in the US, these car sharing facilities, it's actually a threat to car manufacturers. Because what they're actually saying to manufacturers, you know, you don't need to buy a car. And obviously, car manufacturers want to sell cars. Hmm. So strategically, some of the OEMs are starting to partner with these guys. So instead of fighting change, you know, you partner with them and say, all right, so maybe I'll supply you my vehicles, you know, because I realize there is a segment of the market that will make use of your service.
Why? Well, I mean, I had a meeting with one of our big banks. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but I had a meeting with one of our big banks a couple of months ago and described what I saw is going to happen in a particular area in the automotive industry. And I described it as water running downhill.
Yes.
You're not going to stop it from...
You can stand in that river, but that water is not going to stop. It's going to go around you. So so very good that they're doing that.
What do you think, Chad? Would you? I actually think the sharing, now understanding it better exactly what it is. So for the consumer, am I right in saying, Ricardo, there's no risk for you?
No, I think it's
it's the manufacturer. It's the person who's supplying the cars, basically. But there is a concept of that very similar, like our Avis, those guys. So
yeah,
in some ways,
I think car rental is different to car sharing. You know, and I think what I'm hearing is there's two forms of car sharing. There's sharing my personal car, the one I own, and getting a kind of income from it to cover its costs.
Yes.
And then there's the kind of hybrid bit, which is the car rental from point to point, where, you know, you go and pick up the car like they do in the UK or the US. Yes. You know, car rental like Avis, what do you think the future of those guys? You know, let's not say Avis, let's use all of them. Avis, Thrifty,
Imperial
Budget, Europe Car. You know, they're all in the same boat. What do you think the future of that sort of car rental is?
I think definitely that car sharing will eat into their market share. Of course, if you face yourself, you're out in Cape Town for a day to do business, you pick up your vehicle at the airport, you do your business and you drop it off. You know, if there's another cheaper alternative, you know, I don't have to put on a deposit, have my credit card and all of that. The same facility, if there's such a facility at the airport, I can pick up a car, do my business. So I think that car rental, and we've seen already with the meter taxis when Uber came to the market, where obviously this eats into the, let's call it the established transport provider. So yeah, it will definitely impact them.
But sorry, but again, they can almost form part of it.
Yeah, no, it's like water running down. You're either with the change, or
trying to make
it. You can be a tree standing in the middle of that river,
it's not going to change anything.
No, it's not. So, you know, in terms of these, I mean, I see it happening a lot. I mean, we've got a good relationship with Uber, and we've done it as a business. We were renting quite a lot of cars up to about a year ago, and when Uber became mainstream, we decided that all of our staff could rather sit in the back of an Uber doing some work than having to drive a rental car around
and be more productive.
So now, as a business, we've taken a decision that we will use Uber service, and we have gone to corporate Uber account, and our car rental the car rental income on the other side that those companies were getting from us has fallen to near zero.
My question now, though, comes in, George, in terms of, and if you don't mind me asking, what sort of cost implication has it?
It's actually become cheaper.
Has it worked out cheaper?
I'll tell you why. It costs you, you know, depending on what car you rent, somewhere between 500 Rand to 800 Rand a day, okay, excluding the fuel of that car to rent it.
Yeah.
Now, one person travels from Joburg to Cape Town for whatever reason, and they've got a series of meetings in an office. They travel Joburg, Cape Town, they pick up the rental car, 500 Rand a day, and they're there for 3 days. That's, say, 1,500 Rand at the bottom end, excluding fuel. They're at the office, they go from the office to the guest house. They go from the guest house back to the office, and so they go for 3 days until they have to get back to the airport, and then they come home. Just taking an Uber to the office costs maybe 250 Rand from Cape Town Airport to our office. From the office to the guest houses that we use, 40 Rand.
Oh, wow.
That's hardly money.
So if you double that at 80 Rand, you got 250 Rand. Say, you know, that's just over 300, 330 Rand. That's on day one. Day two, it's going to cost you 80 Rand. And day three, another 330 Rand. So there you've got 700-800 Rand that you're spending versus 1,500 Rand that you would have spent on a car rental. It's coming in at half. And we did the math and we said, this is a no-brainer. You know, there's just no reason why we shouldn't do this.
And it's considerably more convenient. And I think that's a large part of what Innovation Group is also about, is about that comfort and convenience, and about tying everything up into
one sort of usable
can I say an interface almost? I don't know if I'm saying that. You know, just making sure that everything, Ricardo and myself are talking about it, and it's just so much easier to sit there and only have to go to the app.
Yes.
Instead of having to make your way to the office, actually having to deal with a human.
Have a corporate account. hand over your license.
And there's
the
holding fee.
Yeah, the holding fee, the deposit, you know, 5,000 Rand float or 3,000 Rand float, however much it is.
Plus, our staff are much more relaxed when they get to the office. Sitting in the back of an Uber, and you know, checking their email, doing work, reading whatever. No stress.
Because also,
no
almost traffic. Negates the entire threat of getting lost or being held
that
up
too,
in traffic 100%. As well. Yeah. You know, if I go down to East London, I don't know East London that well,
yeah.
So I'm going to battle to get around yeah. there. I'm going to be reliant on GPS, not necessarily the safest yeah. person there. You know, whereas where I get a local that knows the roads, he knows where to avoid, yeah. which are the quicker routes.
Well, quite often I, you know, because the areas that, some of the areas that I travel in, not all of the areas I travel in, I often give the Uber driver the faster route because the apps aren't quite that efficient yet.
Well, Ricardo, I'm going to ask you something specific on what George mentioned, the other way of sharing, which is now where you can make some money, so you share your own personal vehicle, yeah. for example. But am I right in saying that there would be some liability issues there, insurance issues? I mean, where do we stand with insurance companies there, those kind of things?
Yeah, of course, the insurance, you know, coming from insurance, you know, there's terms and conditions apply. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes.
As long as you tell us, we can cover you and we'll charge you X.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, obviously there's a risk and the insurer have to make sure that, you know, we work on a regular driver. I got a vehicle, I know it's a regular driver, I know it's parked, I know where it's, you know, the distance it may travel, I may have a telematics device in it. So the one risk, one way of doing it, you're going to have to come up with a new insurance policy. And this is what this report's talking about. I think the report's just saying that, George mentioned about, it's like you're standing in the river and you can't stop the water. The question is, because clients want to have these options, you're going to have to go back and redesign all your products to accommodate this. And one of the key issues is then the cost of that. Now, if you want to bring down the cost, and that's what Uber has done, is that you're going to have a lot of automation. Because we may understand that more people you work on a project, you have to pay them. By, you know. So I think the focus in the report going forward is that businesses need to know this is coming. You know, it may be in 12 months, it may be in 24 months, 36 months, but it will be here. How is your business going to react when it hits you? If you're not prepared, you're going to be out of business. That's the case because it's about cost
at
and
some
about convenience.
At some point, that water's going to push you over.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, forming part of it. So is there currently anyone ready for this or not, to your knowledge?
Okay. Let's just go back in terms of the manufacturers because if you look at the vehicles they've manufactured, first of all, because to be able to have access to all these apps and infotainment, there's a big demand for manufacturers now that the consumers want these devices standard in your vehicle. Okay, I was sharing earlier with Chet and I was talking about the four screens that we talk about in the report. You got your laptop, you got your television screen, you got your cell phone screen, and now you're going to have a screen in your car. So by integrating all of these, it's all about how can I create better convenience for the client. But this comes at a cost. And the question is, who's going to pay for it? So motor manufacturers now need to look at ways and means to produce these cars with the customer's needs in it, but still at a cost-effective price and still able to sell and make it at a margin. So this is some of the challenges that motor manufacturers will deal going forward into the future to obviously satisfy the demand from consumers. So, and then it also touch on the dealerships. I mean, I'm just using an example. All of these vehicles got such a lot of technology. You know, if you were a technician 10 years ago, you can't work on the new vehicles. Because these vehicles at this stage, is not a normal, it's not about an engine and a spark plug. And that. This is a lot of about technology. So downstream, in terms of your suppliers that can fix this vehicle. So the whole value chain will start changing now.
I don't even think they fix vehicles nowadays. It's more like plug it into the diagnostic computer, check what's wrong. Oh, okay, that part over there.
Click.
Unplug, click, yes. Put a new one in. That's exactly.
They're part fitters.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no such thing as a
natural mechanical in there. Don't say that too loud. But I have to tell you something.
No, there isn't. But these guys have to be smart because they have to understand all of the
I'm taking nothing away from them, largely become more part fitting service. The nature of the age that we live in is that of disposable. That you're going to sit there and that something is that small. Cell phone. Do you send cell phone? Okay, cell phone's a bit of a silly example.
Well, it's a commodity, so you can chuck it away. But
that type of thing, cars
have to get there in decades to come. It's going to become that way.
But you know what's interesting as well? This weekend there was a race at Red Star. And one of the new
self-driving racing cars.
no bike. It was all bikes. Okay. So now the new
self-driving racing bikes.
Almost. But the problem is now the technology that we were talking about now. So one of our top SA champions Well, last year's champion crashed his brand new R1, Yamaha R1. Okay, no problem. There's a spare bike. The rules allow for you to take parts from this bike and put on that one, not to have two bikes. Okay, so the technician knows generally the bikes, obviously exceptionally well. He's very good. He's one of the top in South Africa, builds it, doesn't want to start. At the end of the day, he had no finishes the whole day. He couldn't even start the race or finish it. Something electronically from the one bike didn't communicate with the other bike. Mm-hmm. So
it's probably because we still live in this world of having a hybrid car. So we've got electronics and computers, and we've still got an antiquated archaic. We might as well have a coal power station in the bonnet, because that's what it equates to.
It is, and I agree with you. As we're sitting there, we're throwing so much electronics at a technology that is over 100 years old, the internal combustion motor.
And that's why that didn't work, is because you're trying to start a coal power station. That's what you're trying to start.
Yeah.
The people need to be educated who use it as well.
Yeah. I think, for example, and you guys are spot on, just talking about the impact. Talking about servicing your car and part fitters. I mean, Tesla's new vehicle is all computer operated. So with that vehicle, you don't have to take the vehicle in for a service. Because there's such a lot of electronics in it, they actually service your vehicle while you're driving. It's actually like a cell phone. You update your data. So that's an online thing. While you're driving, you know, it's like your cell phone.
An OTA service.
An OTA service while you're driving. Now, that's scary. Scary. But that's the reality.
I love it.
What about the hacking side of that?
Yeah, we've discussed that before, where the guys where the guys hacked into the Chrysler system.
Yes.
Shut it down. And this is where, you know, I know a lot of people aren't Apple fans, and some people are, but this is where Apple's getting it right, because I don't know if you've noticed in the news, the FBI trying to get into that
and he's fighting
phone,
it.
And Apple's pushing against it. Yeah. Why? Because they have such robust technology and encryption
and security,
you can't get into that bloody thing. Yes. So you know, that's another track the world has to go down. Is if you don't want these cars to be hacked, there has to be a closed environment.
Definitely, no, absolutely, I completely agree with you. But never discount the will of somebody with ill intentions.
Well. Do you watch, I mean, it's some legal thing on TV now. It was this week. I can't even remember the name. But they had it was a whole court case on this self-driving car where the woman ended up having an accident, not driving it. It was supposed to drive itself and landed in the wheelchair. And now they're suing to find out who's now actually responsible. Yeah. So long story short, this car is very capable. Everything 100%, except now they figured out at the end it was hacked. So, yes, it's a story, but it's based on...
No, you know, I believe that...
Some truth.
I see a little further into that, and Ricardo, maybe you can assist with that. You were talking earlier about having to modify and update insurance policies and that. And as we start getting more and more vehicles that have more autonomous features to it, how does this now come into play with insurance policies? They naturally... I'm guessing that they're going to have to update these policies.
They have to evolve.
With
they
clauses in it that, you know, should your vehicle suffer a malfunction due to autonomous braking, auto braking, self-parking, lane keeping assist, you know, that type of thing.
But I mean, nobody's figured this out yet, because I don't think we have enough self-driving cars in the world to figure it out. But who's better? A humanoid? Or a machine.
Well, that's debatable.
So, you know. So
you're a pilot, and you know that still they are still going to send a manned aircraft into battle. Why?
Probably because of the reaction
Only
times.
For now.
You mentioned it a couple of months ago, the situational awareness.
Situational awareness. I don't
think computers are there yet. They're not at that situational awareness stage.
And I like the fact that you use the word yet. Okay. Because there's not a doubt that
I'll give you an example, my car.
Yeah.
I have the technology in it that the cruise control sets a distance between the car in front of me. And setting this up, my car brakes and accelerates depending on what the car in front of me is doing, which is great. I don't have to touch the accelerator or the brake. Adaptive cruise control. I don't have to touch the brake or the accelerator. The trouble is, I can see problems coming. My car can't.
Yes. Now you've got to,
it's happened to me a couple of times. Yeah. I'm watching the road and I'm like, seven cars ahead, they're beginning to brake. My car doesn't stop braking. I would have started to brake.
You would have, yes, you would have.
But my car doesn't stop
braking.
I've
had a couple of vehicles, and yes.
Change your voice tone.
Absolutely. I've tested a few Volvos now recently, and they've got the IntelliSafe system there, which is several cameras that are monitoring. And they can pick up cross traffic. Mm. They can pick up pedestrians and cyclists. And I had one instance where it actually activated. And it wasn't particularly an emergency situation. I didn't have to test any of these safety features, fortunately. But it's only when you encounter one of them that you actually know that these systems work or not.
Yeah.
And it was simple. I was just pulling up. It was a field, grassy parking lot. And there was one of these thin little sapling trees. And as I pulled forward, I was going to park in front of it. It picked it up as being a pedestrian. And it slammed on the brakes.
Oh, wow.
And that was quite a surprise to me. I'm like, whoa, what is that? And then I remember, oh, wait, it's basically collision mitigation. Yes. It's picking up that there is an obstruction there that isn't another vehicle, and it's braking accordingly.
These cars are going to become better than us.
Yeah, I think to give you a bit of my input there.
Yeah.
I think the important part is the vehicles is we also need to take in consideration the other users of the road.
Mm. Absolutely.
Okay, because as you said, this car is brilliant. They can see and protect, but the unpredictability of another human being in another vehicle. Okay, so and that's where the regulatory concerns go. Okay, so the vehicle is okay; it can keep you safe. But you know, how do you deal with somebody else, for example, do not follow the road of the rules, or for example, even you know, so there's still an element of the other person. Not the robot.
I tweeted a couple of weeks ago that that world will only exist when you have 100% of the cars on the road being of those technology. Because you can imagine a V8 Ford Mustang 1964 model driving along, and here comes a self-driving car. That self-driving car is dealing with something it can't understand.
But now, surely then,
and it's behaving in a way that is completely unpredictable.
But George, then what you're saying is it's not going to happen yet.
No, it will happen, yeah. It'll just take long.
We our report shows that in South Africa is about 20 years. That's what the experts say. And it's because of infrastructure. You know, very important. Mm. You know, when you have a self-driving vehicle, you must make sure your town planning is in order, because that car is guided by your GPS and the town planning and the roads are in the perfect condition. And as taxis, it has to take all of those into consideration.
Road names that constantly change.
Well, I know there's
a
couple of bridges in Cape Town that come to an abrupt stop.
Yes, there is. But you mentioned that as well. And active lane assist. Okay. I want to get back to automatic braking, which is actually being, you know, almost enforced. As a step towards autonomous driving. But active lane keeping assist is a function on a good couple of the higher end new vehicles where it's not only going to audibly let you know that you're straying out of your lane, it's actually going to tug on the steering wheel a little bit to keep you between lanes.
Yeah.
Now, I could wax lyrical and I could lament this topic for ages. I could, because I've got a bit of a moral resistance
dilemma
to it. No, it's a bit of a resistance to it. But it worked great in, I tested the 7 Series BMW, worked fantastic in the Western Province, in and around Cape Town. It was marvelous. I tested a Volvo.
Well, let's
more
be honest,
recently.
I mean, Cape Town's roads and stuff were better.
Thank you. And in Joburg, it worked 40-50% of the time because there were insufficient road markings for it to be able to pick up. And
oh, wow. So it works
It works off a camera, and it basically picks up where's the yellow line, where's the white line, or the two white lines, and it keeps you between those. It uses forward-facing and rear-facing
But do you think
cameras.
That has to change? Because you know, there's always going to be those problems. You go to any country in the flipping world, and you will have roads that have just been resurfaced. There's no markings on it yet. So now a self-driving car can't drive on it because there are no flipping lanes. So the markers that these cars are picking up has to evolve past looking at painting on the road.
Yes, no doubt it would need to. But this isn't as big a problem overseas as it is here locally.
Yeah, well, Cape Town's probably on par.
Well, much better. But I mean, I remember, and I'm going back 16 years now to the USA. If there was a problem on the road, they were resurfacing it that night.
Yeah.
By that afternoon, within 24 hours, that road is resurfaced and repainted.
Well, I suppose that's the alternative, is municipalities have to jack up the game.
You know? Absolutely.
And that's where the infrastructure, that's how I was saying earlier. Without your infrastructure and the maintenance of your infrastructure, those cars can become a risk on the road.
Now, my moral resistance here comes in with the the fact that I believe, sadly, and unfortunately, this is a little bit of a take on innovation group here. No, not the group, but just what you guys do and what you guys are involved with, is that all this technology and this convenience is starting to make drivers complacent. Yep. We were talking as well earlier out of studio just about how you were sitting with connectivity, and you were talking about making your car your fourth screen.
Yes.
Now, we sit there and we've got cell phone, which is already a distraction, you know. It's fantastic that you don't have a laptop on your lap as you're driving. I'm sure some people do sit out there and do that, but it's a further distraction. Yeah. You know, you've already got the infotainment systems there that can play audio, play video. They can now connect to apps. You know, you can sit there and you can check, you can tweet from the car while you're driving. Mm. This is just breeding the sort of contempt for road rules and for the actual, dare I say it, the art of driving.
We're becoming passengers.
Absolutely.
But I have a solution.
But the cars aren't ready for it yet, though, and that's the problem. While we're sitting there, we've got adaptive cruise control. Sorry, Vilmarie, we'll get to you now.
People are moving faster than the car itself in terms of their complacency.
They're thinking that they can do more now because of the time that this is affording them. Mm. So you've got your active adaptive cruise control. You set that. Okay, you know it's going to break for that car in front of you.
So you look away.
So you look away. And I found
myself doing that. You know, I look away, I want to set the GPS, and you become complacent.
Now imagine if you've got lane assist.
You think you're going to be steered.
Exactly. All right, so you're sitting there, and this is now, all of a sudden, the road makes a severe turn like that. It can't cater for a severe turn like that. It's not picking. It's got a reaction time as well. It's relying on cameras, and it can't replace that situational awareness that we were talking about. Mm. But it is still breeding a complacency behind the wheel that is making people poorer.
So I suppose the message is don't get complacent until every car on the road is self-driving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. I would be a firm advocate for that.
I honestly have a solution. Uh-huh. Innovation group, you've got a skills development section, right?
Yes.
So we need to get you guys to train up all these Uber-like drivers.
Okay.
Teach them and everything, okay? And then you get all the George-like staff and everyone to be passengers. And then they're productive, and they don't have to focus on the lanes or any of those things. Then you have employment, and you have productive, and you have safer roads. I'm just saying.
I could poke holes in it, but it's a great brainstorm for me. You go for it, girl.
We need to create employment. So imagine everyone that works and it's productive can be more productive in their vehicles on the road.
Yeah.
And you have guys driving, they have jobs.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
100%. I think part of that is there's telematics, just to link it in.
Yeah.
Because you talk about driver behavior, you talk about improving driving skills, and I think we've seen already with the insurers how they use telematics to change driver behavior.
Mm.
So obviously there's still some sensitivities with some clients where, you know, if you've got a telematics device, people know where you are, what time of the night, and how you're driving.
I think that's half the problem. It's not the telematics, it's somebody knows where I am.
It's the Ashley Madison syndrome.
No,
exactly.
And you're spot on. So there is a concern of people sharing that personal information. But the other benefit is it's shown that if you give the consumer a big enough incentive, a discount on his insurance, or, you know, you can assist him to track where his 18-year-old is on a Friday or Friday evening, the telematics device can also assist in almost reviewing your driver behavior and give you feedback. And hopefully that feedback can be used. That's what the fleet owners do. They get the driver's behavior, and they can then focus on where the driver's complacency crept in and then give training. So part of the technology already in vehicles, there is this telematic functions. So it's where you can also use that feedback in your driver behavior for training or to improve the overall driver behavior.
Because we know nothing works quite as well as an incentive.
Yes.
You know, it's the same reason that there are 13th checks and the like. It's the fact that, you know what, if you can perform and you do your job properly, there's an incentive to it. You drive decently, respectably, you obey the rules of the road, you drive efficiently as well, there's a reward in it for you. You know, it's a basic reward system, which is a very good way of going about things. And once again, I'm actually going to go back and I'm going to say that this is once again Formula One technology creeping into our daily lives and our cars. The fact that these telematics are coming through is like the telemetry feeds that Formula One drivers get. Yeah. Sit there and they can sit and say, listen, you're too hard on the brakes in corner number two, you're turning in too late, something of the sorts. Yeah. And through the radio communications, they can modify the driving style or modify the vehicle accordingly. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is a fantastic. It is definitely a way forward. Yeah. And once again, let's just refer back to motorsport if you'd like to see where, you know, where the big money is being spent and where our cars are going to evolve to.
Yes.
Because one of the things you guys also said at the conference was that racing also has a big impact on our technology, on the technology that comes over into the...
Yeah, I'm actually going to give a good example. I mean, we are a proud sponsor of the Toyota racing team in Dakar, you know, with Neil de Villiers and that team.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yes. So, good results.
Yeah, lovely results this year.
So I think the importance of racing is stated exactly that. That racing, as much as it's all about the adventure, the adrenaline, the feedback that we get from those kind of the impact it's got on the vehicle, all of those things get fed back into the R&D team, which use that information to see how can we make a better, stronger in a car that lasts longer.
Absolutely.
So racing is normally ahead of passenger vehicles.
Mm. Yes.
But all of that technology eventually filter in. And that's why big manufacturers invest so much money in racing. Mm. Is because they can use the technology later and pass that via into your passenger vehicle.
And basically absorb all the research and development costs that it cost them to initially develop this new technology and the number of failed attempts. Because let's be honest, we only see the successful attempts. We don't see the failed attempts, which still cost money.
Yeah.
You know, so they can finally absorb that cost by just passing it on to the consumer at 100%. A slightly reduced rate.
Yes.
But it is still that pinnacle and it's that real world practical sort of execution that gives them an idea. I just want to go quickly here. There's a bit of an article here. Auto brakes for all cars. US legislators and automakers are in talks to make automatic braking standard in cars. So very similar to what you were talking about there, George, in terms of having that. And the question here is, would this help curb some of the and reduce road deaths in South Africa? Now, this is in Washington, where the US government regulators in the auto industry are taking a more lenient approach than safety advocates like when it comes to phasing in automatic braking systems for passenger cars. And this is according to some private negotiations.
So I mean, my two cents worth. I think, like traction control, you know, most cars today
and bikes.
Have traction control.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years ago, that wasn't the case. Mm. But when you get into that car, the traction control is automatically turned on. It's not something that you have to switch on.
And optional, yeah.
It's optional, but you can turn it off. So
can you really?
Yes, you can. In all the cars I've driven, anyway, you can. There's a button on the dash where you can turn off the traction control. Maybe there's some that you can't, but in most cars that I've driven, you can turn them off. And the same should apply for automatic braking. It should be turned on automatically, but the driver still needs to be in control. You must be able to turn it off. So if you kind of see, oh, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable with the road, the terrain, I must be able to switch that thing off.
Once again, just going back to that situational awareness and the driver being the final one to read that situation and make that decision that, listen, I don't like the way that this traffic is moving backwards and forwards and that, or the behavior of the car with the automatic brakes engaged is just not, it's not feeling right, it's not feeling comfortable, or it's causing risks.
I think the principle for me is I'm in control of my own life and I want to be able to make those decisions. I don't want something else to make those decisions for me.
So are you saying that when the other day when you were driving, you could see something coming up and your car wasn't responding in the same time frame?
I could see beyond what the car could see.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now, so is that at that point that you can do nothing?
I don't have to wait. I switched it off.
No, you
can brake. You can definitely, you can always override it. So you can override these systems if you believe that hasn't read the situation correctly.
So you can override it. So
I just had a button on the steering wheel that says cancel, and I just hit it.
And that's what you want, basically.
Yes, you must be able to switch these things off. You must be able to say, I don't want automatic braking, or I don't want lane assist or automatic steering.
Now, my question, once again, and I'm going to run back to what we were talking about earlier, is that once these systems are at a point now where they're polished enough and it starts becoming almost legislature that these vehicles have to be fitted with these automatic brakes, what sort of contempt is going to be bred there?
Not if you have the driver have the alternative to switch it off.
No, but in the same sense that you were saying, I mean, Georgia, and we've seen it. All you need to do is drive on the N1 when it's raining. What happens in the right-hand lane?
Oh, no, you get this big concertina.
Not only the big concertina, no, I'm just saying free-flowing traffic.
Oh, the water building up.
No, is the traffic in the fast lane doing the recommended 110 kilometers an hour with a proper following distance?
No.
No, there's always going to be some yobbo there in a fancy Germanist, you know,
hey, some of them do it in Japanese cars too.
No, they do it as well. No, I'm just being, but it's predominantly because, and this, there's a reason for this. Barreling down, they're still doing 100 and plenty in the wet with what you know is an unsafe environment. Mm. And you just know that that driver is sitting there and has taken and put too much emphasis and too much trust in the electronic aids, whether it's the brake force distribution, the anti-skid, the traction control, all of that, and is completely misreading the situation.
So, but what's changed?
No, I'm just thinking that if you're going to make this legislature...
So this is not going to make it better or worse. It's going to make it the same. Because even if the guy's driving a 1964 Ford Mustang, he's still going to make the same stupid mistakes. He's still going to, you know, drive at 140 km/h in the wet. You'll still get that. I don't think anything will change.
I think the principle of keeping everybody safe on the road in terms of preventing... accidents, you know. Yeah. I mean, we can just see in South Africa every year how many people lose their lives here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in
most cases, it's excessive speeding. So I think the principle is good in
it's
terms
not
of
speed, it's the sudden stop.
Also, never the speed.
So I think the principle is good. I think it's always about how you're going to implement it and how you're going to monitor that thing, you know, in terms of South Africa specifically, yeah.
Like we always say, the infrastructure, hey? When we get back to
it. It is that infrastructure. And South Africa's, I mean, we're possibly running around with our hair on fire here, sitting there and raising all these questions.
Yes.
And it's possibly a little bit early to be raising these questions because it's, like you say, we're seeing possibly 15 to 20 years that some of this technology is only going to start filtering in. So it is still a long way away, and who knows what direction the country and the infrastructure is going to go and whether it's going to be able to support it, whether it's going to be too far gone to sort of rehabilitate to the sort of standard.
And if you look also at consumers' demand change also, if you look a couple of years ago, everybody was talking about electric cars.
Yeah.
You know, still relevant. A lot of people still develop it. And the idea of electric car was suddenly because if the oil price is... more than $150, then suddenly all want to look for alternative energy.
Yes.
Once the oil price dropped, suddenly if you look in America, for example, the last couple of years there was a lot of focus on small and fuel-efficient cars.
Mm.
But suddenly when the good times roll, you'll see last year they had record sales in terms of big pickups.
Yep, V8s and
stuff. So what you'll see is the consumer's behavior, again, coming back. Once the economic... You know, if there's more money to spend, our behavior change. And then suddenly all of these things that in terms of fuel efficiency goes out of the window. Mm. Mm. And we want to have that nice brand new German SUV, you know, and because we can afford it.
Yeah.
So I think the main driver here is that what does the consumers want and what can they afford? And that will impact the kind of decisions that manufacturers will have to make to put in cars.
Funny you said that because that's exactly what my poll that we started at the beginning of the show tried to elicit is, do consumers right now want self-driving cars? And I've got 31 votes so far, so it's a small sample run for the next 24 hours. And the question on Twitter was self-driving cars ? And we've got 74% of people don't want it right now.
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
74%. So go on to my Twitter handle at George Meany and go and vote. I'd be interested to see what consumers think about self-driving cars. Do you want it now? Maybe in 20 years' time it'll change.
And even the sharing I saw. No, like me, only with your hubby or that's it.
A friend shared with me actually this joke where his son, you know, they were discussing self-driving cars and his son was in the state. He's a 14-year-old boy. He said, I don't want these self-driving cars because I'm looking forward to get my license.
Oh, shame.
Because I want to drive. So that's the same concept.
Good
We're
point.
All looking forward to get our license and drive our first car.
Well, maybe it should be a certain age. The ones we question whether they should go for license again or not.
Yeah.
Mm. Self-driving cars.
Self-driving cars. All right, well, we're going to take a quick ad break. And when we come back, we're going to squeeze in a quick review on our vehicle for this week.
Choice. Sometimes you have it. and sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop, compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. AutoTrader New Car. The choice is yours.
Right, so our review for this week is, believe it or not, and it's a car that's got a lot of attention, and it is, you're already fist pumping there. You've got the Tiger Woods thing going down there, George. And it is the Ford Mustang. It is the 2016 Ford Mustang. It is the sixth incarnation of the Ford Mustang. And we were down in Durban, KZN, filming it.
What a sexy car.
It is. Now,
good photo, too. Did you take it?
Yes.
I was very impressed with that.
Yes, it's at a very Durban location. And I'm not talking about Sunrise or Johnny's. I'm talking about Moses Mabhida Stadium. Got a couple of Durban listeners having a fat chuckle there. But, fantastic car. I mean, it's not the... We didn't get the big wig, the big dollar one, so it's not the 5-litre GT. The Ford Mustang, the 2016 Ford Mustang, is available in South Africa because for the first time, the Ford Mustang is being produced in a right-hand drive, which means that it is legal for sale in right-hand drive markets, of which South Africa is one of them. Now, we did get the Ford Mustang, but that was only the first generation, 1960... I think it was late 60s, 68, 69... and a few years in the 70s, and that was about it. Then they basically made it illegal to import or to sell a left-hand drive vehicle and to register a left-hand drive vehicle, so we never saw it again. There's been a couple of the fifth generation that were brought in and converted to right-hand drive to make it legal for use on our roads, but this is the first time that you can walk into a Ford dealership, go there, drop your money, sign the papers, walk out, or drive out with a new Ford Mustang.
What was interesting for me on that video review that you did was that the Ford badge does not feature.
Yeah.
It is, it's phenomenal. I'm still trying to get my head around it. Why?
Because Mustang is that iconic.
Yeah.
And sadly, I'm just going to come out and I'm going to cut to the chase. I'll give you some motor specs and that. And if you really want to see the motor specs and some of the details, go and take a look at the video, Auto Trader SA, Auto Trader South Africa on YouTube. The video is up there. You can also see the links to it on autotrader.co.za and also all the social media outlets for Auto Trader. Of course, Facebook, Pinterest, Google+, Twitter, the whole works there. And it's an expensive car,
yeah.
Plain and simple. We were driving the 2.3-liter turbo fastback in an automatic. That is one step up from the cheapest Mustang you can buy.
Define expensive, because you know, I had this debate with the sales team the other day. What is expensive? You know, expensive for me is when you get less value than you're paying for.
It's exactly that.
Do you think?
It is exactly that.
Okay. Why?
All right. To put it short, and I'm going to get Manish terribly sorry if you're listening. This one is 720,000 rand.
Uh-huh.
790,900. That's for the auto. It starts at 699,900. So it's 700K is the cheapest you're going to find a Mustang for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's just a number. What are you getting for
900,000. You're not getting a Porsche Cayman.
Ah. Okay, so...
Which you can get for the same money.
So value is relative to its peer, which you think is the Porsche.
Porsche Cayman.
Okay.
Porsche Cayman. You could go and get a BMW 435 and still spec it and still not be near that money.
So what, are we paying for the badge?
You're paying for the status.
The status. 1964.
Was when the Ford Mustang was designed. This one is harking back to it. Let's put this into
But into there's value in that, right? I mean,
there is.
You don't
I
need
also
to.
Think so.
You
yeah.
don't. So can we say it's expensive? Because expensive means you're getting less value, and part of the value is attached to that feeling.
Yes, absolutely. Not
so you're adding
200%.
An emotional value.
I'm saying that there is value there, and it's not expensive.
Is it enough to double the price of something?
What would make it half?
The price everywhere else.
Oh, in other parts of the world for the same car?
Everywhere else in the world, it is half the price of a Porsche Cayman.
Okay.
In South Africa,
it's the same price.
That for me, I'm sorry, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to be able to, that's a problem.
Okay.
And why? Because the Ford Mustang is glorified in South Africa. It's a lovely car. They're using that. They're milking it for all it's worth because... You've got to remember that the Ford Mustang isn't a sports car, or isn't an overly sports car. It's not outright American performance. Like I say, if you want that, go and buy a Corvette, go buy a Hennessy, something of the sorts. Even a Viper's a little tricky there, because what Americans know about performance is dangerous. It's fast in a straight line, don't try stop it, don't try turn it. Okay. Fortunately, this one stops, and this one turns. It's now got an independent rear suspension for the first time. It's something that the French have been doing since the 70s.
But it's still not worth half.
Bucky suspension before.
It's been a live rear axle before, and that is just, you know, archaic as well. So it is. It's overpriced, but yes, a strong whack of that money is going to the image and the status and the head turn factor, the HTF.
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, I still think that a premium for that, you can't put a price on.
Two questions.
Yeah.
What are the colors? One. And the other question is, how many are they planning or hoping to sell?
Comes in any color.
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends. I mean, that's all available in the Ford brochure. I'm not particularly selling it here. But it was a fantastic car.
That will make my decision.
Well, you can get it in red.
Okay, no.
She likes black cars.
she does like black cars. All right, folks, but unfortunately, we need to wrap things up. We have run out of time, but I just want to say a big thank you to Ricardo Kutsia. Thank you very much for joining us. It was lovely having you here and hearing a little more about Innovation Group and what they do.
Thank you very much, guys. Enjoyed your company and hope I could add some value.
That scary now, was it?
No.
George, thank you very much for joining us once again at George Mini. And Volmery, thank you very much.
At SA Speed Green.
Yep, folks, that's all the time we've got for you this time round. So join us next week, same time, same place here on Cliff Central for Auto Central.
This is CliffCentral.com.